Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday, February 15th meeting of the Minnesota House of Representatives Education Finance Committee. I'm Representative Jim Davney. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them, and for the public, these same materials are posted online. Members, if you're looking for all of these items in one place, they are attached to the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Mr. Lee, will you please take a roll call of the members?
Thank you, Chair Davney. Roll call will commence now. Chair Davney?
Present.
Representative Sandstedt?
Present.
Representative Kreisha?
Present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Daniels?
Present.
Representative Damuth?
Present.
Representative Drafkowski?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, present.
Representative Mueller? Representative Mueller? Representative Richardson?
Present.
Representative Thompson?
Thompson, present.
Representative Walgamott?
He will be joining us shortly.
Representative Shum?
Present.
Representative Joaquin?
Present.
And then Representative Mueller? Okay, we have 16 members present, therefore we have quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Members, this week we'll be spending our time discussing the serious staffing shortages that public schools are facing and a variety of solutions to keep staff in their school communities. As we know, workforce issues are roiling the economy across sectors. Name the sectors, they're having a hard time recruiting and retaining staff wherever they may be. Our schools, our child cares and the like are no different. The bills we'll be discussing this week are good for workers, good for schools, and especially good for students who benefit from a continuity of caring adults in their lives to thrive and learn. The first, we'll be hearing two bills today, as well as a presentation from the Professional Educators Licensing and Standards Board, PELSB, at the end of the hearing. We're going to start with House File 378 from Representative Joaquin. It's our intention to lay this bill over for further consideration and possible inclusion by 10:50 this morning. Representative Joaquin, would you like to make a motion to move House File 378 before the committee and to lay it over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, so moved.
Thank you very much. Representative Joaquin, before you introduce your bill, I understand you have an author's amendment you'd like to offer to get the bill in the shape that you'd prefer.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have an author's amendment titled A22-0305.
All right. Members, the A22-0305 amendment is before us. Representative Joaquin, can you please tell us a bit about the amendment?
Yes, it increases the training time from 16 hours to 20 hours. I originally introduced this bill before COVID. Our students are struggling a bit more, and our staff need more training to meet our students where they're at.
All right. Members, this is a voice vote. Is there any discussion to the Joaquin motion? Seeing none, this is a voice vote. If you would please unmute. All those in favor of the adoption of the A22-0305 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Representative Joaquin, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. As an education support professional, this bill is near and dear to my heart. You know you've heard this before. It requires that education support professionals, ESP, also known as paraprofessionals, are given 20 hours of paid professional development or training per year. The bill proposes an appropriation to pay for this. As the bill moves forward, a new fiscal note will be worked on. There are also requirements that those who work with individual students with disabilities or varying abilities must be given paid time to review a student's individual education plan, which is also called an IEP, and or time to collaborate with a student's teacher regarding the plan. This communication between teacher and paraprofessionals who are working with the students with special needs is so very important, so that the parent knows what triggers the students may have, what works to calm or motivate them, and what vulnerabilities that they may have. Many of these requirements are already happening in our schools, but this bill would not only make sure the training is happening, it would also provide the funding for schools to provide the training. In a short few weeks since session has started, we've heard how many more needs our students have, especially around mental health. That makes this training and the presence of qualified support staff in our classroom even more important in meeting the needs of our students. This last interim, I once again worked in our schools as a paraprofessional, this time as a substitute in two different school districts from kindergarten through middle school. In previous years, I've worked as an ESP with kindergartners with special needs and in a level 3 EBD program at Aquila Elementary in St. Louis Park. I've also worked as a paraprofessional in early childhood and at the high school level. Over the years, I've seen how effective professional training can be. I have also seen what happens when training is not available, or when you start after the school year has begun and the training then has to be done on your own time. That happened to me when I started at Aquila Elementary a few years back. Even though I had started at the beginning of the school year at Aquila, it was after some training that the professionals in the school had already provided. So I had about 5+ hours of online modules dealing with health and safety that had to be viewed on my own time. I was happy to do it, but our ESPs deserve to get paid for their time when they're training for their jobs. Finding those funds can be even harder than finding time. With the appropriation, this bill would provide our schools some relief. St. Louis Park is not alone in trying to find money for training. Many districts are forced to pick and choose what they can afford versus the training their ESPs as a fully functioning team could do so much more to serve our students with. While this is my story, I know it's not a unique one. You will now hear from paraprofessionals with firsthand experience that are doing incredible work every day in our schools.
Thank you, Representative Joachim, for that introduction. I'd like to note for the record that Representative Mueller has joined us. First on my list of testifiers on House File 378 is Michelle Denard, a paraprofessional with the Osseo School Districts. Ms. Denard, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Michelle Denard, and I am an employee in the Osseo Area School District. Good morning, Chair Dabney, committee members. My name is Michelle Denard. I am a special education paraprofessional in the Osseo School District. I have worked in the Osseo area schools for 17 years. I truly love my job, and I love helping all students. I work with students with special needs in the transition program, ages 17 to 21. My students have behavior and emotional disorders and learning difficulties like autism spectrum disorder, developmental cognitive disorders, mild and moderate, and severely profound, physical impaired, emotional behavior disorders, fetal alcohol syndrome, bipolar disorders, and other mental health and physical diagnoses. These are very complicated diagnoses, and proper training is essential to learn how to best support all students. It's important that all student needs are met, no matter how complicated their situation. For example, in our program, we might get a new student who uses a wheelchair. As a special education paraprofessional, we are the staff required to transfer the student out of the wheelchair in order for the student to use the restroom. It is unsafe and inappropriate for us to learn how to meet the student's needs 30 minutes prior to helping the student. We not only need to learn how to meet the student's physical needs, but we need to know what the student's IEP requires for supporting goals. This is inequitable for ESPs. We work with students as well as teachers, and sometimes we are with the students more than the teacher. So we need this training. Without paid time set aside for this important learning, we do not have a chance to do this. When we walk into our building to work with students, we are required to meet the students' needs. And without appropriate paid training, it is impossible. Most training is offered for licensed staff a week or two before school starts. For ESPs, we have to always get training in the evening or when all ESPs have the day off from school. With that, a lot of ESPs have children and other jobs that they have to go to in the evening hours, and no one to care for their children while they go to train to help their students. If ESPs can get the training at the same time when licensed staff get the training during the summer or when licensed staff get a day off of professional development, ESPs should be able to do professional development with licensed staff that would be beneficial for both staff and students. We are required in special education to take a CPI training most of the time. When the training is offered to most ESPs are unable to do the training due to the time they offer and no time to take it when the time is needed to be with students. When we normally take training, it's not a paid training and we have to do it in our own day off from school. On behalf of all Minnesota ESPs, I ask you to please support this bill so we can have the proper tools we need to help all students. Thank you, Representative Youakim, for authoring this bill, and thank you, Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to speak to you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Denard. Next on my list is Timothy Ray, a paraprofessional with the Minneapolis Public Schools. Mr. Ray, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Timothy Ray. Hello, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Timothy Ray, and I'm a special education assistant in Minneapolis. I work one-on-one with students who need the most support in a tough job, but I love it. But as a professional, I do not receive training to improve at my job. Right now, we only get first aid training, CPR, and CPI, which we need. But we could be learning so much more that would help us and our students. I also have to take a test to be a licensed personal care attendant. I'm required to do this so I can help my students while they are in our care. But I have to do online training on my own, and I do not get paid for that time. Now I'm gonna move on. It would be nice to have the 20 hour of dedicated training each year for paraprofessionals like me that this bill provides. With that yearly time, we could take classes that match our interests of our specific student needs. Right now, we are only doing these few things, and also the same thing every year. We could be learning so much more, and that would only help us in our work and help our students. If the dedicated time is required by the state, districts couldn't do things like take back staff development days or make us seek out things on our own. I am grateful for my union that provides a lot of training, but we could do so much more as a district. We always hear that there's no money for things like this, but the state has the money this year to invest in people, especially ESPs who have done so much for our students during COVID. ESPs are leaving the profession, but having more training so they can feel more prepared to do their jobs could help us keep the good people who want to work with kids. Being a special education citizen is an important job. Please support this bill and help me and others ESPs like me do it even better with dedicated training. And thank you all this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. Last on the list of authors testifiers is Mr. Bill Schwant, president, ESP president at Poplar Bridge Elementary in Bloomington. Mr. Schwant, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. My name is Bill Schwant. Good morning. As Chair Dabney said, I am the president of the Bloomington Federation of Paraprofessionals. And more importantly, I am a special education paraprofessional. I work with students in the multi-categorical program at Poplar Bridge Elementary in Bloomington. I'm here to speak about the need for funding to provide paraprofessionals across the state with meaningful professional development. Currently, Minnesota Statute 125A.08, Section C, Parts 1 and 2, state that each school board shall ensure that the district provides professional development opportunities for paraprofessionals, but that's not occurring. This part of the statute equates to yet another unfunded educational mandate. In my own district, we receive 1 6-hour day of professional development at the beginning of the school year. During that day, we are treated to such scintillating subjects as mandated reporting, maltreatment of minors, data privacy, bloodborne pathogens, just to name a few. While important in their own right, none of these address topics that allow paraprofessionals to further develop the knowledge and skills specific to the students with whom we work. In talking with paraprofessional leaders across the state, this is not an exclusive problem to Bloomington. Paraprofessionals come from many walks of life. Many have little to no experience in working with students receiving special ed prior to starting their employment. For new paraprofessionals who start prior to the school year, they are afforded an opportunity to meet with teachers and learn a little bit about the students they'll be working. But for those who start once the school year commences, they are typically cast right into the fire with little or no training. Without professional development upon employment and annual opportunities, paraprofessionals may never develop the skills and understanding necessary to make a positive impact on a student's education. One of the outcomes of the COVID pandemic is that paraprofessionals are an integral part of students receiving special education services. Investment in professional development for paraprofessionals is not only an investment in paraprofessionals, but it's an investment in students. Psychologist Abraham Maslow developed a concept called Maslow's hammer. This concept revolves around the quote that if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Students, especially those in special education, need paraprofessionals with a tool chest full of approaches to help them learn and succeed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schwant. Members, when this hearing was posted, the public was provided instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of the bill hearing. We received two requests for public testimony from Ms. Lewis from the Minnesota School Boards Association and Mr. Uni of the Minnesota Department of Education. Ms. Lewis, would you please introduce yourself for the committee and proceed with your testimony? Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kim Lewis with the Minnesota School Boards Association. Today, I'm also representing the Minnesota Association of School Administrators and the Association of Metropolitan School Administrators. We really do appreciate the opportunity to weigh in again on House File 378. We've had the opportunity to work with Representative Joachim, the author, and as the bill's evolved over the previous couple of years, we've been very grateful for that. Some of the changes or improvements that have been incorporated allow flexibility in timing and professional development for our schools' education assistants, and we very much appreciate the funding that's been provided for paid orientation and professional development in this bill. Last March and April, we had the opportunity to again work with the author and with Education Minnesota, and we came to agreement in several areas. We would like to see these agreed upon components amended into the bill. One of them was that districts or principals would provide paraprofessionals directly with some sort of certificate of completion for the training that they complete. It was felt that this would be a record for both the employee and the employer, and that the employee had just completed the training in that specific area. Districts would not be subject to an unfunded mandate requiring districts to have an added personnel and record-keeping cost submitting it to the commissioner for compliance. There was an agreement giving ESPs 5 days to review a student IEP after school transfer by a student. And then further, we discussed how MSBA would support the training and time to review student files, only if the provisions were funded by the legislature. And we do appreciate that funding. Mr. Chair, thank you for the time today. And we'd like to continue with the author, incorporate these agreed upon items in the bill. I'll conclude my remarks and stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Mr. Ooney, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Adosh Ooney, and I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education. As you've heard today, education support professionals are a critical part of our school community and educators' workforce, but many times go overlooked when we talk about targeted supports. They provide a variety of services to children and families in our public schools. And that's why I'm here to support this proposal by Representative Yu Akeem to annually fund 20 hours of training for ESPs who primarily service students receiving special education services. And while ESP roles vary in school systems, as I mentioned, one thing they have in common is they all work directly with children, often in small groups or in one-on-one settings. And they're able to build unique adult-child relationships. ESPs help kids is the simplest way to put it. The ESP workforce also tends to be a more diverse subsection of our teaching workforce, so they tend to be more representative of the communities they serve. And some ESPs are assigned to work in settings working directly with children with disabilities or those receiving special education services. And with this assignment comes additional responsibilities than working with students who are solely in general education settings. This bill and the governor's budget bill recognize that there's a cost to the required training and professional development that many of these additional responsibilities require annually. This training must happen during non-student contact time, often bringing staff in before the school year starts, and districts and charters do not receive dedicated funding to design and provide this training or compensate ESPs for their time. Pursuing funding for this training and professional development would go a long way to ensure that our ESP workforce working with students receiving special education services have the training necessary to support student success. This in turn has the added benefit of increasing job satisfaction and hopefully retention of our ESP workforce. So as you heard last week, the governor has also proposed a $15 million per year package to fund this training requirement for ESPs working with students receiving special education services. And it also includes funding for paying for exam fees, which would prioritize former ABE graduates to serve as ESPs. So just to conclude my comments, we're very supportive of the efforts in this bill that are also carried in the governor's budget. And again, thank you for the opportunity to testify here today in support of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Ooney. Note to the public, Representative Wolgamont joined us during the hearing. Thank you. And Representative Erickson, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for MSBA, Ms. Lewis.
Why don't you proceed with the question?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lewis, how many different staff assist our special education students, especially those who are considered disabled?
Ms. Lewis?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, that is a very good question and one I do not have at the tip of my tongue. I would be happy to research that and get back to you with a specific number, but I believe there's a number of different positions of staff, if you will, that work with our students on a daily basis.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Lewis, maybe you could help us understand their hourly pay as well, because I think besides a para, there might be an aide. And I know that we've had teacher assistants, at least when I was teaching, we had teacher assistants, and all three were a little different. I'm not sure that's changed, and I think it would be important for us to know. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Any other questions from members? Seeing none, Representative Youakim, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was also going to take a stab at answering Representative Erickson's questions. The three kind of positions you mentioned are all ESPs or paraprofessionals nowadays. You might have a student that also has an occupational therapist or a physical therapist or a speech pathologist that's working with a student or somebody that is a licensed teaching staff that does pull out in reading intervention and something like that, but those are licensed differently. Paras are ones that are kind of the catch-all for all the folks that are working directly with their students that need a little bit extra help that aren't licensed teaching staff or licensed professionals in physical therapy or psychology. So that hopefully will answer your question a little bit. With that, I just wanted to say thank you for the committee for hearing this again. ESPs are the folks in our schools, as you've heard from Mr. Ray, Mr. Schwantz, and Ms. Denard, that work directly with our student population and are really in need. In our districts, I can tell you as a sub this year, I could have been 14 different places at once. That's how desperate our schools are to have those extra hands in the classroom. We trust ESPs with very important caretaking tasks. They need professional development to be successful with their students and in their careers, and we owe them at least the chance to receive that training. Training that will help them grow in their job, feel fulfilled, and then maybe even possibly help in retention, so subs like me aren't asked to be 14 different places at once. You've heard testimony about how important and effective this training is, and I sit before you with personal experience of how valuable the training can be. As this bill moves forward, I'd be more than happy to continue to work with AMSD and the concerns they have with the language, as I've done in the past, and thank you, members. I ask for your support on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. And with that, Representative Youakim renews her motion to lay over House File 378 as amended for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. Members, I was too excited to get to the bills. I jumped over approval of our minutes from this past Thursday. Representative Sandsteed, I understand that you're here to come to my aid. Do you have a motion for us?
I would like to make a motion to approve the minutes from the February 10th meeting.
Thank you very much, Representative Sandsteed. Any discussion to the Sandsteed motion to approve the February 10th, 2022 minutes? Seeing none, members, again, this is a voice vote. Please unmute yourself. All those in favor of the Sandsteed motion, please indicate by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you all. Next on our agenda is House File 2133. Welcome to the committee, Representative Olson. It's our intent, members, to lay this bill over for further consideration or possible inclusion in a future bill by 1140. Representative Marquardt?
Chair, I move House File 2133 be laid over for possible inclusion into a education finance omnibus bill.
Outstanding. Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Would you also be so kind to move the A22-0295 amendment?
I will move the A22 amendment.
Representative Olson, my understanding is that this gets the bill in the form that you prefer. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is.
Thank you very much. Members, any discussion to the Marquardt motion? Seeing none, again, another voice vote. Members, please unmute. All those in favor of the Marquardt motion amending House File 2133 with the A22-0295 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Representative Olson, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So I know you've already had some great discussion around the amazing work that the education support specialists do. And we all know that all educators deserve the same things, respect for their contributions to the care and education of our students, fair compensation for their work, including affordable health care, safe working conditions. Unfortunately, most education support professionals across Minnesota don't get enough of any of those. These critical educators are disproportionately women and people of color who performing multiple jobs during the COVID-19 pandemic, and most at risk of exposure to the virus. They are the first people students see in the morning and the last adults they see when they leave in the afternoon. But thousands of ESPs don't have enough left in their paychecks after deducting for healthcare insurance to pay for a week of groceries, much less daycare. And the low pay and uncertainty of summer employment are forcing many to leave the profession for more secure jobs and making our school staffing shortages worse. All education support professionals deserve the pay and benefits to sustain a family, safe work environments, and a voice in their working conditions. So this bill incorporates many of the pieces that you heard earlier and adds other pieces as well with the addition of the amendment. So sections 1 through 4 are the paid family and medical leave, which provides school employees with up to 12 weeks of paid family and medical leave for a year through payroll deduction and employer contribution. Includes paid training for paraprofessionals, requiring districts provide paraprofessionals working directly with a student with a disability to provide a paid time to review the student's IEP and time to collaborate with the student's teacher prior to beginning the work with the student. Also requires districts to provide all paraprofessionals, Title I aides, and other instructional support staff working directly with students with disabilities 20 hours of paid orientation or professional development prior to the beginning of the school year or prior to a new hire beginning their work. And this, we have an appropriation in the bill that's blank, and I'm sure will be noted we are waiting on a fiscal note, but the intent is to appropriate for that 20 hours. Section 6 is unemployment insurance for school hourly workers, which has had much discussion in other committees as well. So it expands access to unlicensed school employees, many which are commonly laid off during the summer months because they are given reasonable assurance that they would be retaining work in the following semester. So this would ensure our hourly school workers who perform their critical jobs are eligible for unemployment insurance. We don't have an official fiscal note on this, but the Economic Policy Institute did an analysis of this, and it would cost about $28 million a year to extend this to hourly school workers. And so we'll be the intent is to also appropriate for that in this bill. Another big piece that is in this bill is Section 7, the affordable health insurance. Many ESPs make wages so low they can't actually afford the health insurance that their districts offer. We've heard many stories around this from ESPs across the state. So the bill would require districts to cover 83% of the annual premium costs, 50% of the annual out-of-pocket maximum for single premium, and 72% of the annual premium cost, 50% of annual out-of-pocket maximum for a family plan for its employees. So this would provide state funding to assist districts on a pure pupil basis and allows the districts to levy authority to help cover these costs. Section 8 is the school personal paid day for e-learning. This language keeps hourly school employees whole when districts decide to move to distance learning. So it would require districts to continue to pay their hourly workers full wages, hours, and benefits. Workers would be allowed to work from home when available and be assigned to work at an alternative location or to be retained on an on-call basis. Section 9 is the minimum starting salary appropriation. The work of an ESP is often high stress and low wages, as you'll hear from the testifier. The average wage in Minnesota for an ESP professional is about $15 an hour. And according to the Economic Policy Institute, non-licensed school employees are paid less than a typical worker across our state. So the bill would appropriate a set amount from the general fund to increase the minimum starting salary of non-licensed school staff to $25 an hour. In the last section, as noted, is Section 10, the paraprofessional training appropriation, to make sure that when there's paid training, we would be appropriating to districts to be able to cover that. So, Mr. Chair, that is the bill, and I do have a number of testifiers to speak to the bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Olson. To the testifiers, I would urge you to keep your comments focused, as we do have a number of testifiers and are still aiming to conclude our deliberations on this bill by 11:40 so that we can hear from PELSBY, the Professional Educators Licensing and Standards Board. And a couple of you have already spoken. But let's start with Michelle, I'm going to say Sadel from Bluffview Elementary in the Lake City Public Schools. Ms. Sadel, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Michelle Sadel. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to share with you today. I am a special education para in Lake City, and I'm also the president of our paraprofessional union. I'm here today to ask that you take action and pass the ESP Bill of Rights that's been proposed. This bill would help Minnesotan ESPs both professionally and personally in many ways. Like we heard earlier this morning, the extra 20 hours of paid training that we're trying to get paraprofessionals entitled to would be an amazing asset to paras' toolboxes, like many of the other testifiers spoke about. We work with children who maybe have motor skills that are not so developed, maybe just need help on the academic side of things, or some that have some negative or violent behaviors, some emotional regulation needs. We need more training so that we can meet the needs of these children. Training and professional development would provide those resources so that we can be better equipped to do our jobs. Through the COVID pandemic, when our district went to district learning, paras were given a choice. We were told that we can either show up in the building and do whatever work they had for us to continue to get paid, or that we could choose to not work and not get paid. I'm a single mom of 5 kids, and this choice was really hard during the pandemic. I chose to show up and work because I needed a paycheck, but that choice proved to be just as stressful because my kids struggled with distance learning. Our district did not approve paid leaves, and I couldn't go on unemployment. Section 8 of the bill goes into detail about wages for ESPs during e-learning. It's a very small way to acknowledge what ESPs have gone through during the COVID pandemic, and it holds districts accountable for paying their employees. ESPs love their jobs. We love our students, but like any adult in any sector, we need a paycheck to support our families. This bill also proposes a $25 per hour minimum wage for hourly school workers. I currently make $14 an hour, and that's after negotiating our first contract with our district this summer. When I first started with ISD 813 3 years ago, I started at $11.47. The wages we are currently paying ESPs equals an income that is lower than poverty level in our country. Our governor has done a great job of making education a priority in our state, and you all have played a role in supporting us. But we cannot be focused on education in Minnesota without acknowledging the focus, without acknowledging the discrepancies in what we have been paying our support staff. Our education system would not work without paraprofessionals. Yet, I can go work at a fast food restaurant and be paid more. Setting a $25 per hour minimum wage for hourly school workers shows that ESPs are valued and needed, and it just might help with some of these staffing shortages that we're currently facing. Again, I urge you to take action and pass the ESP Bill of Rights. This would help Minnesotan ESPs, both professionally and personally, and is honestly very overdue. Support the ESPs and continue to show our state and our country that Minnesota is focused on the whole education system. Again, thank you for your time today.
Ms. Sadel, thank you for your comments. Mr. Ray, welcome back to the committee. Please state your name again for the record and proceed with your testimony on this bill.
Okay, hi. So again, hello, Chair, Mr. Chair and committee members. Again, my name is Timothy Ray. I'm a special education assistant in Minneapolis. I'm also a product of Minneapolis Public Schools, and I love my job working with students there. I'm here today to ask you to support this bill, which will give educators, support professionals, or ESPs like myself, the respect we deserve as professionals in our work. The part of this bill which would make an ESP starting salary at $25 an hour would be so helpful to not only to get people into the job, but keep them there. I'm doing okay, but I have worked in this district for many years, and I just live by myself. But then I have coworkers who are new or who have families that are not paid enough. Minneapolis have hundreds of open ESP positions this fall, and people have been leaving our schools all year. They are tired after working in person during a pandemic and not making enough to pay their bills. They can go elsewhere and work a less stressful job for more money. ESPs also don't work year-round, so being able to access unemployment insurance would be so helpful. We may be able to work summer school, but that's not always guaranteed. Many ESPs, including myself, struggle with bills over the summer and spend the rest of the year catching up. Like a lot of ESPs, I worked in person during the last few years, making sure my students had the support they needed. So being recognized as an essential worker, like this bill does, would help me feel valued for going above and beyond and putting my own health at risk. We don't need any more pats on the head or words like, thank you for your work. We need the funding for our work and our livelihoods as professionals in education. ESPs are often the staff who work most directly with students one-on-one, like I do with my special ed students, and invest in us so we can do our best in our jobs will be an investment in the students too. Thank you all so much this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Ray.
You're welcome.
Next on the list is Ms. Denard. Ms. Denard, welcome back to the committee. Please restate your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Michelle Denard. Ms. Denard, I am a paraprofessional.
If I can ask you to pause. The sound quality, the audio from your connection, there we go. Let's try it with the video off. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Again, my name is Michelle Denard, and I am a special education paraprofessional in the Osseo School District. I am here today to urge your support for the ESP Bill of Rights. This bill provides a number of initiatives aimed at bringing support to hourly school workers. I have been an ESP for 17 years, and I am concerned about what's ahead for the profession. As we've learned throughout the pandemic, the world of work is changing. We are no longer willing to accept part-time pay for full-time work. We are struggling to fill positions, and there is no wonder why education support professionals are leaving and not staying. During the school year, we are not paid a living wage. We are expected to do things we have no training on, and throughout the last 2 years, we were the employees told to do our work in person, no matter what. On top of that, we have to worry about what we'll do in the summer when many of us are laid off. Depending on where you live, it can be difficult to find another job that will only hire a worker for 3 months. And then some individuals find another job during that time and end up not returning to the schools because that work is higher paying and consistent. What will happen if we aren't able to bring qualified workers into the profession? Will we just drop the bar lower to find anyone willing to take a job working with kids? Especially our most vulnerable students, like mine in special ed. Please think about this as you're looking for solutions to improve our economy. This bill provides a number of solutions to problems we've been talking about for years. Right now, we have a $7 billion surplus. Please consider using some of it to invest in ESPs. It will have a positive impact for years to come in our public schools and for the students we work with. Thank you for listening to us today.
Thank you, Ms. Denard. Next, Kathy Nelson from Lincoln Park Middle School in Duluth. Ms. Nelson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure, good morning. My name is Kathy Nelson. I'm currently a paraprofessional at Lincoln Park Middle School in Duluth, Minnesota. Last year, I retired after 36 years of being a parish pastor, 30 of them here in Duluth. I quickly realized how I missed working with kids. I had a lot of teachers in my parish, in my church, and I knew there was a huge shortage in our schools. That led me to become a paraprofessional at the beginning of this school year. As a para, I work mainly with kids who live with autistic spectrum disorder. I am in an ASD 3 classroom. I accompany these kids to class and help them with their schoolwork. I also help the teachers in the classrooms that I go to throughout the day, doing whatever I can to help make their day easier and helping the students. I love my job. However, I'm very worried about the load that the support staff are being asked to carry in our schools. Because of the low wages, many of my colleagues have other jobs outside, such as working at Menards in the evening or DoorDash. The work is exhausting, and I can't imagine having to go to another job after our day. As we're coming out of the pandemic, we're working with kids who didn't get a regular middle school experience. As simple as it may sound, some of our kids are struggling just to sit in a chair for an hour. A lot of times I have to end up chasing kids back into the classroom. Teachers don't have the luxury of focusing solely on one student, so that's where paras come in. However, the district is struggling to fill these roles and properly train us at the same time. I've been in my role for 6 months now, and in March, I will finally get the training I need to do my job safely. Even more, the shortages are being felt by everyone. Right now, we have over 40 ESP openings in the Duluth district. We have to double up in classrooms and other support areas too, such as lunchroom and custodial staff. They're incredibly short, and people are being asked to do more with less. I so enjoy working with students. I've tried to recruit other people into this job. However, many of them say they can't accept the low pay and not having work in the summer, besides being so worried about the pandemic. I want to thank the committee for giving us time today to share our love for our work and the challenges that ESPs are facing. Please pass this House File 2133 to bring support to the ESPs across the state who love our kids and our public schools. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson. Next on the list, Joan Lancour, clerical support for the Duluth Public Schools. Ms. Lancour, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Joan Lancour, and I'm a clerical currently support students in the Duluth Public Schools. And if you watched Jeopardy last night, you saw that saw on Jeopardy as well. For over 27 years, I've been active in the Duluth Public Schools, first as a parent, then part-time ESP or educational support professional, and now the last 8 years as a full-time employee in the clerical unit. I had no idea the long-term impact that ESPs made on students until we started as a family in the Duluth Public Schools 27 years ago. When my son was being bullied in eighth grade, it was a para that helped intervene, an ESP rated as a gold star. When my son told me he always waited last in line at the lunch line, the lunch ladies made sure he got food to eat. Once again, a gold star for the ESP. When my son forged his signature on the, quote, skip day, it was a clerical that called me to let me know what had happened. Once again, a gold star for the ESP. My oldest son, who now has graduated from college, hated to go to school, hated school. The bus drivers always had to wait daily for him to get on the bus as he dragged his feet. Once again, a gold star for those ESPs. When he also got in trouble for writing on the carpet, who was it that helped him clean it? It was the ESP, the custodian. As a part-time para, before I came into the workforce full-time, I changed diapers, helped children learn to read and write, worked on fractions, and that was a learning tool I had to go back and learn as well, and needed to think outside the box to teach our students. Our paras are more than just part-time employees. They're part of the backbone of our schools. As a clerical, one of my temporary job responsibilities during this pandemic is to call out for staff to sub for our shortages in our schools. Today, one of our high schools were 11 paras short, another one 9 paras short, one of our middle schools were short 7 paras, and the other middle school was short 6. Even as we speak, I got text messages asking if we could send people out to help in the lunchroom because they were so short. I looked up at our contract to see what our lunchroom staff were earning, $11.85 an hour. $11.85 an hour for a beginning cafeteria worker. I want to tell you another story about my friend. My friend started in the Duluth Public Schools, or no matter where she started, she came from the homeless shelters. Her wage right now is $18 per hour. because she doesn't work full-time in that 52 weeks of the year. Her annual salary is less than $30,000 a year. $30,000 a year. And because she had COVID, she did not receive any sick time because she had used it up because of health issues. This is typical with the vast majority of ESPs. They earn less than $30,000 a year, despite the fact that more than 80% of them have college degrees. Many ESPs carry a significant amount of student debt, and more want higher education but cannot afford it. Imagine if we gave a higher wage and we helped that pipeline from ESPs to teachers, how that would also help to fill some of the larger void that we're finding with teacher shortages. Again, imagine what you would do to help pass the Bill of Rights for our ESPs to receive a living wage. Our students deserve a quality education that is offering support needed at all levels. At the height of the pandemic, I was told I was required to be in the building as many of our parents were. We did more than support staff. We worked to help deliver lunches, made packets, answered phone, help parents navigate any learning management systems, and work childcare before and after school. Our skeleton crews of lunchroom workers served thousands of families during the pandemic. Our motto should be, just ask us, we've lived it. But we have not been asked that question. We can give you insight into the workings of our schools that are often not looked at or reviewed. Over this pandemic, workloads have increased immensely. Due to the shortages, we are sending certified staff into our buildings to work lunchrooms, to work paraprofessionals, to work recess, and not quite yet to work maintenance, but that might be on the horizon. Well, working at the sites is supposed to be temporary until there's a fair wage for all positions in the ESP. These positions will not be filled. Again, please pass the Bill of Rights. Educational support professionals provide many of the services needed to keep our students learning in the classrooms and to keep them safe. These positions of many are the unsung heroes in our districts, those that keep the clocks humming behind the scenes, sometimes those that we hear about little about until we're in a crisis like today. This crisis could be solved by offering a fair wage. We as ESPs are an important part of the success of our public school system, and we need both local and state policymakers to recognize that. If not, the state is going to lose a critical workforce to more competitive forms of employment. Again, thank you for the work that you're doing on this bill. It is amazing. It's been a great experience to tune in today. So with that, I ask that you please pass House File 2133 and support the workers who are supporting our schools. Thank you for listening today.
Thank you, Ms. Lancour. Next on the list, Carrie Haley, paraprofessional at Robert Elkington Middle School in Grand Rapids. Ms. Haley, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Carrie Haley, can you hear me?
Yes, please proceed, thank you.
Good morning, my name is Carrie Haley and I'm an ESP at Robert J. Elkington Middle School at ISD 318 in Grand Rapids. This is my 10th year as an ESP. Currently, I am working with 7th and 8th graders in the special education department. I love working with my students. My favorite part of the job is when they get those aha moments and they really understand what's going on. However, I'm torn between my love for my work and the low paying support that comes from being an educational support professional. ESPs work in high stress roles in the district and somehow have the lowest of the pay scale. ESPs or special education would not exist without us ESPs. Every day, I spend more time with the students than the teacher does, reinforcing what they learn in the classroom over and over again. ESPs show up and do our jobs despite the way we are treated. Personally, I've been bit, I've been hit, I've been kicked. Students stand there and yell at you for hours over doing a worksheet. The pay should reflect the amount of work we put in. Increasing our wage to $25 an hour would be a start. This would help ESPs we have to keep them, to hire new ones, to keep up with the inflation. There are many ESPs in my district who have to work multiple jobs to make ends meet. Unfortunately, many of us have a hard time covering the cost of health insurance. The cost of health insurance in our district went up 150% a month. That's 25% of my salary. ESPs with kids can barely afford the childcare and the health insurance now that we have less. Because of the failure to support hourly school employees, ESPs are leaving. In the last year, we've had 19 ESPs leave our district alone. And it's harder and harder to recruit new ones because There are more competitive jobs out there that are less stressful. Please do what is in your power to help support the ESP professionals. Our ESPs would not work, or our educational system would not work without the ESPs. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Ms. Haley. Last on the list from the author's testifiers is Mr. Sean Layden, president of the Minneapolis ESP local from the Minneapolis Public Schools. Mr. Layden, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Sean Layden. I'm an education support professional in the Minneapolis Public Schools. I've worked in early education, in special education, and in elementary classrooms at what is now Ella Baker School in Minneapolis. I currently represent over 1,200 ESP and MPS as our elected union president. And every day in our schools across Minnesota, ESP make the magic of education happen for our students. But we don't talk a lot about how our ESP make that magic happen, or how we, as a state, ensure that the very important people who do this work can afford to stay in our profession. Whether it is leading literacy and numeracy small groups, teaching students social-emotional skills necessary to stay in or get back into class, or being the educator who our students most relate to, our ESP are central to the academic success of our students. In short, we make school happen. I'm testifying today to urge you to pass the ESP Bill of Rights in its entirety, because while we are essential to our students' success, the status quo is unacceptable. When our union conducted a survey of our members, we found that over 60% report working at least another job, with many working two or three other jobs at the same time they're working in our schools. When I receive reports from our school district about our unit, I see that the vast majority of our folks make under $32,000 a year. That's before paying taxes or for health insurance. Yet, if you talk to licensed staff, administrators, parents, and guardians, they will tell you that our state's ESP are essential to student success, and oftentimes, without us, school as it is supposed to happen cannot. That is why it is so distressing that in our school district, like others in Minnesota, we have so much turnover and so many vacancies. People simply cannot afford to stay in this profession. I was visiting with a member recently at Riverbend School, and she told me she had to take a second job to make enough to pay her bills after coming into education as an ESP. But because she never saw her own children, she quit her second job. If something doesn't change at the end of this school year, her plan is to leave our profession. An accomplished woman of color who can't afford to work in one of our most in-demand positions in our schools in which she loves. We will lose another educator unless we do something differently. And that is just what our legislature has the opportunity to do. By supporting the material gains for our ESP laid out in this ESP Bill of Rights, you can help make this a sustainable profession. You can provide consistency for our students in the education jobs that oftentimes most work most closely with our students. Our students who are most vulnerable or depend on school the most deserve a consistent educator workforce they can rely on year after year. The situation is urgent and requires your action. I urge you to support the ESP Bill of Rights in its entirety as an important strategy to improve student outcomes, because we rely on ESP to support our students who need it the most. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Layden. And members, the chair will just take a moment to observe the power of virtual meetings. You know, Mr. Layden and Mr. Ray come from Minneapolis, where any past years they would easily be able to come over to the Capitol and testify, but we have testifiers here today just on this bill from Lake City, Osseo, Grand Rapids, and several from Duluth, as well as Minneapolis. And the use of the technology really opens up opportunities for citizen involvement in the legislative process. Members, when the hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of this bill hearing. We received one request for public testimony. Ms. Lewis, please restate your name for the committee and proceed with your testimony on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kim Lewis. I am with Minnesota School Boards Association, And today I'm also representing Minnesota Association of School Administrators, the Association of Metropolitan School Administrators, and we are grateful for the opportunity to weigh in on 2133 again. We want to start by saying that education service professionals are indeed a very valued part of our workforce and our district for our families, our staff, and our students. The first four sections of House File 2133 of the bill relate to employee health insurance. While a great concept, we do have great concerns for a couple of reasons. First is the cost. School boards currently don't have the authority to levy for funds that would be needed to cover the employer portion of this proposal. And even if granted the authority to levy for these costs, it places yet another tax burden on our property taxpayers. If the state seeks to require districts to provide this benefit, we would ask the state to provide funding for it. The second is the impact on staffing, which you all know is already in a crisis situation. When employees could be out of the classroom for a potential 38 weeks, districts are going to have to hire subs. And as you're fully aware, today we find ourselves in that staffing crisis, and we're simply not enough substitute teachers, paraprofessionals, bus drivers, nutrition workers, et cetera, to meet the needs of our districts. Even if we could find the staff, that would be an additional cost to districts to bring them on. Additionally, we ask how collective bargaining is impacted. If passed, would the statewide benefit be a part of the local bargaining negotiations? Would it supersede the negotiations? How does it align with the currently negotiated paid time off in the CBAs and for similar reasons? And then what would happen to FMLA? How do they all work together? Section 5 is very similar to the bill just heard a few moments ago in committee here, and our organizations have worked with that bill author, and we would ask for the same consideration in this bill for the flexibility, timing, and state funding for the training outlined in House File 378. We hope to have continued conversations with Representative Olson on that. Section 6 relates to unemployment for unlicensed school personnel, and due to time constraints, I won't go into detail, but we have testified on previous bills on this topic, and we remain concerned about not only the cost to districts, but the unfilled summer positions in our districts. Once again, if the state seeks to require us to provide this benefit, we would ask that you provide funding. And to the final sections of the bill, our districts really believe in local control and the ability for local school districts to negotiate contracts. This is a long-standing tradition in the state of Minnesota. We've honored that, and we really think it's important. This provision seeks to move away from that philosophy and practice a setting of a statewide minimum wage for education support professionals, where the state does not set wages for any other group. MSBA does have a legislative policy, 3.028, which opposes establishing employee salaries and fringe benefits on a statewide or regional basis. We, again, wish that we can continue to work with Representative Olson on the different aspects of the bill. And Mr. Chair, thank you for your time today, and I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Members, any questions on House File 2133 or the testimony that we've received?
Chair,
Representative Thompson.
Can't get my hand up fast enough.
Quite all right.
Hey, I did have a question. I just wrote down just a couple of things real quick. Chair, Kathy Nelson was speaking, and she actually touched me. Right here on my shoulder, because I remember Philando Castile actually was a nutrition service worker. And he always used to say, I love the kids. And I always say, like, we work for the same district. Why are you working every summer? And he said, because I love the kids. Didn't realize that until I heard the kids speak about Philando. Also, you know, everybody wants a clean bathroom until it's time to pay the janitor. Everybody wants a hot lunch for the kids until it's time to pay the nutrition service workers. And I know this because the wages haven't moved. And so, like, this actually, like, a lot of the testimony I heard just now, like, I just want us to, like, lay in it for a little bit and try to understand, because I this is my first time even hearing about the wages. But I also do know that, like, my next door neighbor makes $7.50 every 2 weeks. And she's a TA, and her rent's like 14-something a month. So I do understand that everything goes up except for the pay for some of our, and we know these are essential workers. We knew that before the pandemic. You guys were essential workers. It's just like, and they're actually, we send our babies to these individuals and hope that they take care of our babies and get them back on the right bus at home, get them back home safe. And then we ask them to do this for minimum wages. And so I was hoping that we all like soak in that for a little bit, because at the end, our kids are the ones who will be losing if we lose these important people in our school systems. Thank you so much, Chair, for letting me speak.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. Any other questions from members? Seeing none. Representative Olson, do you have any closing remarks? Oh, excuse me, Representative Youakim, my apologies. Didn't see that hand up.
That's okay, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say thank you to Representative Olson for bringing this bill forward, and thank you to Representative Thompson to highlighting the voices we heard in testimony. Paraprofessionals play an incredibly important role in our schools, no matter where they are in our schools. And until we start treating them like the professionals they are, we will continue to have a hard time filling those positions. And as we've talked about in other bills, these positions also, if they grow in their jobs, can lead to them becoming teachers and helping our teacher shortage as well. So I just want folks to think about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. Representative Olson, any closing comments?
And just thank you to the members for hearing this bill, and thank you to you, Chair, and just thank you to all the testifiers. I think they did an eloquent job. I will just quickly say that my husband was a paraprofessional when the pandemic started and is now a K-2 special ed teacher, but I don't think our family fully understood the impact of ESPs until we had one in our house. The amount of work that they have done and do every day is incredible, and is the backbone of our education system, and they are the absolute heroes, and we need to do more than lip service on that, and that's what this bill is really about, so that people can be able to afford their lives and continue to do the thing they love, which is to be a support specialist in our schools and help our students out. So thank you for hearing this bill, and thank you to the committee for the great discussion.
Thank you, Representative Olson. With that, Representative Marquardt renews his motion to lay over House File 2133 as amended for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. Members, next we'll hear a brief presentation from Pelsby relating to the current supply and demand in the special education licensure area, as well as a preview on some of the teachers of color and indigenous teachers statistics. I would like, since we do have a floor session at noon, to wrap up just a couple of minutes early to allow members to transition between this hearing and the noon session. With us today, Dr. Yelena Bailey, the Director of Education Policy from Pelsby. Dr. Bailey, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. Looks like share your PowerPoint and proceed. Thank you very much.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having us here today. My name is Yelena Bailey. I am the Director of Education Policy here at Pelsby. And I have with us our Executive Director, Alex Luizzi. We're here just to share with you some data and trends that we've seen with regard to teacher shortages. And so I'll present some of that to you very briefly, given your time crunch, and then turn it over to Alex to dig into the wider implications and key findings and then some possible solutions. So this first slide that you're seeing is just to give you a picture of the key shortage areas across the state. And the table that you're seeing on the left there, you'll notice that we look at it in terms of FTE, and that's to give a sense of where the most number of hours are spent teaching in an area across the state by teachers who hold a tier one license, a tier two license, or an out-of-field permission. I want to bring to your attention that in that table, you'll notice 4 out of the 10 key shortage areas are in special education. And then there's, of course, more common kind of broad fields like elementary ed, math, English, and communications. The table on the right is a little bit different, and that just gives you a sense of which fields have a good portion or majority of teachers working in that area who do not hold a tier three or tier four license. And so that might be a small number of educators or a small number of hours across the state in that teaching area, but it lets you know which fields have kind of a higher shortage despite, you know, how many people are working in that area. You'll notice a good portion of those are CTE areas, as well as some world languages and ASL. The second thing I want to bring to your attention is from our supply and demand report that we actually talked briefly with this committee last year. And this is speaking to the second way that teacher shortages are defined in statute, and that's with regard to the gap or closing the gap between the racial and ethnic makeup of students and the racial and ethnic makeup of teachers. And so I know there's a lot of data here, but I just want to point to your attention that bottom right-hand number, which shows us that we're at about 38% students of color and Indigenous students in the state, as well as there's a breakdown here of what that looks like across different economic development regions. I also want to highlight that while we notice kind of Headwaters and the Twin Cities area as the larger percentages, that even in the smallest percentage, we have about 15% of students of color, and that's still about three times the teachers of color in the state. So even at the lowest number, there's still quite a bit of a gap. This slide gives you that picture of, in contrast, what we have for teachers, right? So it gives you the racial ethnic breakdown of how teachers identify, as well as which tiered license they hold. And I'll just draw your attention to that bottom right-hand number to show we're still at about 5.5% teachers of color in the state of Minnesota. I do want to point out that this slide does show a higher percentage of teachers of color that hold a tier one and tier two license. But in terms of numbers, that's a very relatively small number compared to the number of teachers of color who hold a tier three or tier four license. The last thing that I just want to share with you is something we've really noticed and that Alex is going to dig into a bit more. And that's that there is a high proportion, about a third, of tier one teachers are working in special education. And the largest group, as you can see here, is an academic and behavioral strategist. But it gives a sense of where those tier one licenses are primarily, or a good portion, I should say, not primarily, are being used. About a third are working in special education areas. So with that, I will turn it over to Alex.
Mr. Luisi, Executive Director of PELSBY, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, my name is Alex Luisi. I'm the Executive Director of the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. And boy, do we appreciate the opportunity to come to talk to you today about shortage areas. This is, of course, a constant flow of conversation at our agency, at our board work, and in everything that we do. We had a lot to come to talk to you about with the educational support personnel issues when we talk about the crisis in special education, but oh my goodness, you had testifiers that covered most of that for us. So we'll touch on some of the pieces moving forward, but know that their testimony really spoke to the strong group of people that are already dedicated to education and could help fill some of our shortages, specifically within special education. So first of all, when we think about this crisis, it is across many licensure areas, but we do see that focus within the area of special education, which is why we wanted to focus on it today. The first thing that we wanted to point out is that we do know that there is federal legislation, the Individuals with Disability Act IDEA, that requires teachers that work in special education to be fully qualified, or if not fully qualified, to have certain aspects of training support within them. It's the language in the federal statute talks about intensive professional development and intensive supervision. And there's a reason for that. We understand that the scope of special education is so broad that there's so much work that needs to be done, and understanding specifically in IEPs and different ways to work with different types of special education students, that training is so necessary to be able to be an effective special education teacher. So we want to hold that in our minds when we think about what can we do to make sure that more, not only paraprofessionals, but tier one and tier two teachers get that full training needed to be a very effective special education teacher. One of the things that we're seeing in this crisis, the shortage crisis within special education, is the difficulty that tier three and tier four teachers are now facing with the necessary supports that are needed to effectively help the tier one and tier two teachers with special education, their workload, IEPs, the IEP situation often needs the expertise of a tier three or tier four teacher. And so we are hearing not only from tier three and tier four teachers, but administrators, superintendents, principals, how difficult that has become, and how many tier four, three and tier four teachers are actually leaving because of the expanded workload that has put upon them. Of course, that workload is beyond just the supports that would be needed for for other teachers. We hear often about caseload when you're not able to fill special education seats at the teachers' positions, that increases the workload of the other special education teachers. So that's the sort of a quick overview of what we're seeing within this crisis. And we'll go to the next slide, if possible, Dr. Bailey. Thank you. So we wanted to come and talk about solutions, not just admire the problem. So the first area that we focus on when we're thinking about the shortage crisis is preparing more teachers. So as already discussed, education support personnel are the people on the ground that could step into these roles, could receive that training. They're already committed to education. They already work with students. They know what the environment is like. They're committed to this work. One of the things that we see is that a lot of paraprofessionals or some paraprofessionals don't have that BA requirement to be able to start the training and be able to move on to that tier two enrolled in preparation and become a teacher of record. So you'll see probably later in the session a bill that we are supporting that allows us to expand the possibilities of who can fit into tier one and tier two, including dropping the BA requirement in very specific situations, one of which being individuals who are enrolled in teacher preparation. The Grow Your Own funds that have been supported by this body, supported by the Senate, supported by the governor in years past, the governor's supplemental budget has an increase to these funds. This is an incredible way for us to be able to provide the tuition dollars for teachers, either education support personnel, tier one or tier two teachers, to get enrolled in preparation and move forward. That is the primary way we see that can start to fill these gaps. And we appreciate that the governor's supplemental budget puts a lot of additional dollars into these Grow Your Own programs. But tuition is not the only factor. We do know that individuals have a difficult time completing the student teaching aspects of preparation if they have to leave their position. So there's a couple things we want to highlight there. One, again, are additional funds for student teaching grants. There's some funds currently approved, but again, adding to those dollars through the governor's supplemental budget. And then residency programs can really fit with that effective tiered licensure aspect in tier two. A tier two individual can be teacher of record while enrolled in a teacher preparation program, and it allows an individual to have a job, to be a teacher while they're completing that student teaching portion. In fact, we have an administrative rule that helps define what that could look like to make sure they still get the support needed within student teaching through their teacher preparation provider, but can be that teacher of record. And we see the ability for that to partner with an increase in residency model type programs that can help individuals sort of cover that student teaching gap that so often is a barrier for folks when they're trying to complete teacher preparation. And then finally, we agree that the tiered licensure structure is a great way to move folks into the profession and then to encourage them to move up. The problem is right now the legislation lacks requirements for folks to move up those tiers. And in fact, there are pieces in place specifically within special education that allow an individual to stay on a tier one indefinitely because it is considered a shortage area. And tier one, you can stay on there an unlimited amount of time if you're in a shortage area. So we have supported legislation that would require professional development, similar to what was discussed earlier, but for all tier one and tier two teachers to be able to move up the tiers. This professional development would help not only in their training and the time that they are working in tier one and tier two, but it would be geared toward making sure those individuals were moving up the tiers and receive that full preparation that we know is helpful for any individual to be an expert in the profession. So that's in the preparation category. And then, of course, we need to retain our teachers. We're not going to solve this crisis if all we're doing is preparing new teachers and we're losing the current teachers that we have. So within Pelsby's work, we oversee the teacher mentorship grants, and those are a great way to make sure that teachers receive that initial support when they first enter the profession. You've heard all about education support personnel and the funds that can be used there. We understand that the funds that we're talking about today and in the governor's supplemental budget provide that training for educational support personnel, which in turn support the special education teachers currently in the classroom. We think that's a great way to make sure that those teachers are able to do the work that they need and don't want to leave. And then also in the governor's supplemental budget, there's the retention bonuses for aspiring educators. We know money's not everything. When you step into the education, there's the inspiration to work with the kids there, but those extra pieces help get folks in and help them stay in the profession as long as we can. Moving on to the last slide, just highlights very briefly some of those pieces that we talked about. The Increased Teachers of Color Act has increased funds for the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Teachers of Color grant funds. It used to be Q, we call it CUGMIC now. And then, of course, more teacher mentorship funding. And then in the Governor's Supplemental Budget, as I talked about, the increase in Grow Your Own funds, the increase in teacher mentorship funds and the student teacher grants. It requires a lot of support, a lot of work to be able to make sure that we prepare more teachers, get them into this profession, as well as maintain and support the teachers that we currently have. So our mission at Pelsby is to ensure that each Minnesota student has high quality educators. It is a bold and challenging mission, especially in these times, but we're excited to be able to work with legislators, work with stakeholders to help reach that mission. And we hope that not only we can answer questions today for you, but that any legislator reach out to us if you have questions on how to make sure more of this happens. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you, Mr. Luisi. Members, any questions for either Dr. Bailey or Mr. Luisi? Well, okay then. Apparently you did too good a job covering the information. We thank you both for coming today and presenting this information. I'm sure we'll be cycling back over some of this territory again in the future. With that, members, and a floor session at noon, we are adjourned for the day. See you all tomorrow. Thank you very much.